Welcome to The Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana. Good afternoon, Dee.
Good afternoon, Carol. How has your day been?
It's been nice. The sun is shining.
The sun is shining here, too. Yay.
It's still cold as the dickens, though.
It's quite warm here. It's 65 degrees today, which I had a good time this morning. I went over on a garden consult, so I got to hang out with another garden lady and help her with her plants, and I've been doing a lot of garden coaching this spring.
That's nice. I packaged up and sent out some of my books this morning, so that was fun.
I got your book yesterday, your newest book. I was really excited about that.
Good. And we gave away a book to one lucky listener.
Two books.
We gave away Seeded and Sodded, Thoughts from a Gardening Life, which is my new book, and The New Terrarium by Tova Martin. And she was very happy to get them.
She was. She posted about it on Instagram, which I told her thank you, and I put it in our story. So yeah, I love it when we can do that. I love it when we can reward listeners for coming and listening to us.
Yeah, we'll have to think of another giveaway, not this week, but maybe next week.
Maybe next week. We'll think of something fun.
Yeah. Let's do something gardening related.
Oh, imagine that. Gardening related.
Yes. So do you want to hear about my sister's vegetable garden?
I do, because Monty Don has been hanging out here doing stuff too. But go ahead. Tell me about your sister's garden.
Well, listeners that didn't listen to us last week, my sister came to me and wanted to go out to dinner and discuss how she could grow every vegetable you can grow in Indiana. So I had dinner with her and her husband, and I was assured that her husband was still going to be using the regular vegetable garden to grow his regular vegetables. But my sister wants to grow a raised bed vegetable garden, but she wants it at waist height so she doesn't have to lean over to harvest anything.
Oh, she wants it like mine, like my potager.
Like your potager, but not quite as elaborate, because yours is all made out of brick, and it's very, very nice.
Well, thank you. It's made out of concrete brick pavers, yes. And what she want to make it out of? But waist height, let's just say really quickly, waist height is really great because you can often sit on the edge or sit on a stool and garden without having to get up and down constantly. I'm a raised bed fan for many reasons, but waist high, awesome.
So her first thought was to have a friend of theirs make some out of wood. And I said, well, they'll last a couple of years and then they'll rot. Mm-hmm. And so I suggested that she get stock tanks like you use out on the farm and get ones that are about 12 inches deep. And set those up on some sort of a platform or blocks or
bricks.
Something.
Yeah, something.
So we went to the Tractor Supply and we looked at them. And I could tell she wasn't as hep on it as she thought she was. So we've regrouped and now she's looking on the web at all the different options in to do the stock tanks, still maybe on the table, but also looking at some ready-made cedar raised bed planters that she might try. And yeah. My last suggestion was to make a platform and use smart pots, because there are some very sizable smart pots that on a platform might be just the ticket.
It would be a good way to start, because then you don't have a lot invested in it. You know, I have those three raised beds that are made out of wood that I grow both vegetables and a cutting garden in down in my middle pasture. And one thing we did this time when we built them, they're pretty big. And if you ask me what they're measured right now, I don't know if I could tell you, but you can reach to the middle of them because I made sure that it was not too far. So they're probably 8 feet wide. And then I think they're probably 24 feet long. So these are very big beds. I was replacing an in-ground vegetable bed. Anyway, long story short, I used corners that I bought from maybe Gardener's Supply. I think that's where I bought them. And they're these metal corners, and they're so nice because you just beat the boards down into them. And so you don't have to worry about that whole corner thing, which is kind of a pain in the patootie. So that's an idea, you know, if she wants another one.
Yeah, it is an idea. I think she'd like to have these beds up on her deck.
Ah.
So they're going to have to be on some sort of a stand. They can't sit right on the deck.
What about those rolling cedar ones that they sell in some of the deal? Because then she can move them around.
Yes, I've shown her those as well. So she's thinking about it. And in the meantime, before we get any further, we'll talk a little bit about starting a raised bed vegetable garden in a few minutes.
Oh.
But first, we got to talk about flowers.
Okay, let's talk about flowers. What flower is one of the best ones to grow in your early spring garden? Not too early, early to mid-spring garden.
I know the answer.
I bet you do. Go for it.
It's daffodils.
Yes, narcissus. The nice thing about daffodils, there's so many nice things. The fact that they look like the sun, or that they're white with a pinkish cup, or white with a yellow cup, or yellow on yellow. I mean, there's so many choices. But that's one thing. What's another good thing about daffodils that you love?
The thing about daffodils is, once you have them, you have them. Nobody wants them in your garden. The deer don't want them. The rabbits don't want them. And so they are literally something that you'll find in 100 years. They'll come to this house and say, man, who planted all these daffodils?
Yeah, they're like peonies. They're long-lived, and in this case, they're very critter-proof. I mean, there's nothing that wants to eat a daffodil, nothing. And so, thank goodness, because everything wants to eat tulips, everything. And so people, you know, want to do tulips, but sometimes they can't. So my answer for them is, plant daffodils. I also found out, as long as we're talking about critter-proof bulbs, I looked up for our listeners, Chionodoxa. It is also critter-proof. Remember last week we discussed that and we were like, does something eat it or not? No, it's critter-proof. So yay, another critter-proof bulb to go with your daffodils.
Yes, and I have the Chionodoxa coming up in my back lawn. The first one started blooming about a week ago, and they'll be the next wave of color out there. So I'm very excited about them.
Mine are growing in the bed in the front, and they're also growing in the border on the back of the garage. And they really are striking, and I like the blue ones best, personally. They go well with the narcissus and everything else. I mean, you can get them in pink and white, too, but why would you, is my opinion.
I'd get the blue. And, you know, even here in Indiana, we've had a very cool, slow spring. I mean, today it's only 45 degrees, but the first daffodils are starting to bloom, and for me, it's a little miniature daffodil, and I think it goes by the name tete-a-tete.
Yeah, tete-a-tete.
All right, you call them tete-a-tete, I call them tete-a-tete. They're only...
What? I took French.
I did too.
It's tete-a-tete, but that's okay. Go ahead. Anyway, they are little.
They're only about 6 inches tall. And so they're fun. You got a little miniature vase, and they're fun to cut those and bring those inside. And when you do cut daffodils, what special thing do you have to do?
Isolate them, or at least let them sit in water all by themselves for a while before you put them with any other flower. And frankly, just isolate them. It'll just make your life easier, because they have a yucky substance that comes from the daffodil, and it's called mucilage, and it's gross. And it's like slimy.
It's like snot.
Yeah, it is. It's daffodil snot. Only it comes from the base of the daffodil. So, when I put them in a vase, I put them by themselves. But back to tete-a-tete, that little tiny daffodil, I think it's really funny because it starts to bloom when it's only about 2 inches tall. Uh-huh. And then it continues to grow. The stem continues to grow. And eventually it's that 6 inches. But when they first start blooming, they're really short. And they look really funny with those little cups on the, on top. And then they get taller, thank goodness, because, you know. So, love, love, love narcissus. And so, let's talk a little bit about why they're called narcissus.
Go ahead, Dee. Why are they called narcissus?
Well, they're called narcissus because their flowers often face downward, as if they are looking down at their own reflection if they're by a pond, which reminds us of Narcissus from Greek mythology, who loved his own reflection in the water so much that he killed himself because he couldn't love himself. That's sad. That's why those people who only love themselves and only think of themselves are called narcissists. There's another thought, too, that they're also called narcissists because the alkaloid compounds, which are the things that deer don't want to eat, cause numbness. And so Narcissus the youth was numb to everyone else except himself.
That is all very interesting. Now, I have daffodils that I have planted all over the place, and I have a habit of planting them somewhere and then thinking, you know what? I didn't really want daffodils there. And so daffodils are very easy to dig them up. Once they're done flowering, you dig them up when they're in the green and then move them to wherever you want. They'll settle in. Let the foliage die naturally. Don't braid it up. Don't tie it up and with rubber bands. Let it go and die naturally. And believe it or not, it's going to take a long time. I have dying daffodil foliage until July.
Wow. Oh, mine's done in June. But I have an idea for daffodil foliage that is dying and won't die, and it's bugging you because it gets ugly. You know, and you're just like, oh, please go away now. Just plant daylilies next to them because the daylily growth hides the daffodil foliage.
Yes, it does.
It does help. Hostas do too if you have a shady spot. But I was thinking about something you said, oh, about digging them. And I said, uh-oh, because if it's an old stand of daffodils, for some reason they bury themselves deeper and deeper in the soil. Like if you decide the next year, oh shoot, that's not where I wanted them, that's easy. But if you want to dig some that are 6-7 years old, you're gonna have to dig a while. So make sure you dig down deep enough. You'll probably break off some of them. I say this from having done it to myself, but you can eventually move them. One time I stole some daffodils. You want to hear that story?
Yeah. Do we need to wait for a knock on the door with the police coming if they listen to the story?
No, I think I'm okay.
Okay, go for
actually,
it.
Actually, stole might be too, you know, might be too dramatic. There was this nursery that used to be down the road from me a little ways, like several miles. And eventually it closed. And when it closed suddenly. It closed so suddenly that they left all the plants there. Have I ever told you that story?
No.
Yeah, they left all the plants there. There were trees still sitting in there, like rows of trees like they are in the nursery, and they were bald and burlapped ones. There was a huge Elizabeth magnolia that was like, I don't know, 60 feet tall. I mean, it was huge. I could see it from miles away when I would drive down the road, and that's how I found out the nursery was still there as I found that Elizabeth magnolia. And so when I was there, I saw that they had all these daffodils blooming. Uh-huh. And I waited until they had died down and I went back and dug some up.
Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. I mean, I trespassed, but here's the deal. Nobody was there. Nobody cared. And they were just sitting out there. And then a few years later, Mercy Hospital built a facility there. So they were all gone anyway. In fact, they actually killed the Elizabeth magnolia that was full grown.
Oh, that's sad.
I know. I even called the Edmond Streets Department and their arborist and said, please talk to them about that before they, you know, develop that property because the property sold. And she did, but, you know, their complex was going to sit right where it was. So away it went.
Right. And you talk about digging old daffodils. We both follow Constance Gardens on Instagram.
Yeah.
And she has they have a farm just south of me in the next county. And she posted about digging up daffodils that were at an old family farmstead that was in the family. She and her husband probably had to dig pretty deep to get those old daffodils. But it's really neat the way she decided to dig those up and bring them to her own garden.
Yeah. It's a great story. I still have the daffodils I dug up. They're still in my front yard. They're beautiful. It was one I'd never seen, and I figured it was an unusual one, so I bought it. I mean, I didn't buy it. I took it.
But we should tell listeners, if they see an old stand of daffodils and it looks abandoned, they should try to find the owner and ask permission before they dig.
Absolutely.
But if it's clearly there is no owner, so to speak, and they're just wasting, we say go for it.
Yeah, I mean, there was no one to contact, so I just did it. It was still in foreclosure and had been for 20 years, I think. So anyway, I do that a lot when I see things on the side of the road that I can tell that, you know, it's an old homestead and nobody has it. I will always try to contact the owner, though.
Yeah. And in my garden where I have had daffodils and I think, oh, I don't want these daffodils here, because mostly I enjoy daffodils for cutting. So mm-hmm. I've started digging them up in different places and I move them back and I've got a big long row along the side of the vegetable garden. And I've just been planting them out in that row. And that's the perfect place to go and just cut as much as I can when they're blooming.
So I have a question for you. What is your favorite daffodil, your favorite variety?
I have no idea.
You don't know?
You know, I guess it would be the, what I call the tete-a-tete.
Yeah.
Because it's the one I know the name of. I have another one called Rip Van Winkle, I think, that's all like fuzzy or multi-petaled, I guess. It's very odd looking.
Oh, I know which one it is. Yeah. It doesn't have much of a cup. It's almost all petals, right?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah.
I know that one.
And then I have some that I just called fried eggs because they have the yellow cup and the white petals. I just called them fried eggs because I don't know the varieties of all these growing around here.
Well, and one of them is called butter and eggs, and it has that kind of scrambled look too. So I like Louisiana, early Louisiana. It's a real small, delicate daffodil, and they sell it at Old House Gardens. So I really like that one.
Yeah. Which we might want to talk a little bit about what are jonquils compared to daffodils.
Yeah, jonquils, I don't know as much about jonquils as maybe you do. I know this much about them. They grow really well in the South. They do not grow so well, even in my garden, because I'm zone 7A, sometimes it gets too cold in the winter. But down South, people love their jonquils.
Yeah, and I have a few varieties that I call jonquils, and to me a jonquil is a smaller flower and a narrower stem.
Strappier leaves, right?
Strappier leaves. And I like those. I think they look really good in a semi-shaded area. And that's where I have them in my garden. But we should point out that when you go to buy daffodils or jonquils or narcissus, there are some that are better in the South and some that are better up the North. And so always check the hardiness zone from whatever source you're buying them from.
Absolutely. Definitely do that. And right now, a lot of nurseries and a lot of box stores have daffodils already in bloom, including tete-a-tete. And tete-a-tete will do fine if you planted it out now already blooming. But some of the taller ones, they just can't hold up their flower very well. And so you won't get much out of it this year, but you might next year. But my advice is just wait and just plant them in the fall. Order them in about August. Is that when you order yours? That's usually when I order mine.
Yeah, August. Let's tell people August because the catalogs will open up around June. That way we can get all ours first.
Right.
And then people can order the rest in August. So, listeners, you order in August. Dee and I'll be ordering in June.
Yeah, you can order really early. And honestly, that helps the growers because then they know kind of what they're selling. So, or you can wait like some of our friends and order them at the very end of the season so that you can get sales. I'd rather have whichever one I want.
Exactly.
Well, we've kind of exhausted the subject of narcissus, haven't we?
We have, and they're just barely blooming in my garden.
I'd say we're mid bloom here. Oh, guess what else bloomed in my yard? This is a flower, but it's also a shrub. Oganspirea.
Really?
Which is mellow yellow. It's out there blooming for all it's worth. And you know what's bad about that?
Because it's going to get frosted?
It is, because this Friday night or Saturday night, depending on which newscaster you listen to, is going to be 29 degrees.
Uh-oh.
Rats. Yeah. Uh-oh. I just hope my magnolia, my deciduous magnolia, doesn't bloom. My peaches don't bloom. But, you know, this week is warm all week, so who knows?
Who knows? It's been cold enough here. I haven't seen any magnolias trying to bloom. I haven't seen any forsythia trying to bloom. So I think we're okay for a while.
Yeah, my forsythia is in full bloom. But you know what? Forsythia, it can handle a little bit. And But some, boy, magnolia looks terrible if it blooms out. So anyway, shall we move on to veggies?
Yes, but be sure to let us know next week how your garden fared in the frost.
I will, because we're supposed to have two really good, solid days of cold. And, you know, when it gets down to 32, that's not such a bad deal. Well, when it starts to get into the 20s, it's a little bit worse. So, anyway.
So, let's talk about vegetable gardening. We were talking about raised beds earlier. And I think raised beds, whether you do something at waist height or you do something on the ground, is absolutely the best way to grow vegetables.
It's certainly the easiest way to grow them because you don't have to incorporate a bunch of extra stuff into the soil. You can later, but you know, if you bring in good topsoil or good raised bed soil, which they now sell, and mix a little compost into it, man, you just got the best area ever because it isn't compacted. You know, it's all loose and friable, as we like to say, and you just can't beat it. And usually if you buy good quality soil for your raised beds, you don't have weed seeds the first year either. So I say there or in containers, which is just a small raised bed, why not?
Exactly. And one of the things that my sister wants to plant in her raised bed on the patio are smaller things like lettuce and spinach and even radishes that are going to stay a smaller size, and she doesn't have to worry about, you know, like a great big broccoli plant sitting in there.
Well, that wouldn't be very attractive, would it?
No.
No. None of us would enjoy that. Beets. Beets would be pretty in a raised bed on your deck. And the neat thing about having it on her deck is it's right outside. I don't know where her deck is as far as her windows go, but it's not that far from her kitchen.
No.
And it's just a proven fact that if you have your kitchen garden close to your kitchen, you're a lot more likely to use it.
Right. And you're likely to... What I did, I had a pot of lettuce that I grew all summer long. And so I make a little sandwich or a little salad. I just go out and cut some lettuce for it and bring it in, wash it off. And it was delicious all summer long. But I'm growing that in partial shade.
You're growing that in partial shade in Indiana. In Oklahoma, it wouldn't matter where you grew the darn lettuce. It would not grow in the summer. But you could have a fall crop of lettuce and a spring crop of lettuce. So I've done that too. I've grown. In fact, I have a whole project in my book, The 2030-Something Garden Guide, where we did what was called a salad bowl, in quotes. And it's just a big round container with different kinds of lettuce in it. And it was great.
Good. So one of the things that I told her the first thing she could plant along with the lettuce is kale.
Yes.
And kale could get to be a big plant, but if you just keep cutting those leaves and eating them as it grows, it's not going to be that big of a plant.
No, and it takes a long time to get to a big plant, you know? It's not a super fast grower. So yeah, and it's pretty. Some of the kales are really pretty. Some of them are purple, and that dinosaur kale is very pretty. There's a lot of different kinds.
There's a reddish leaf kale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think a Russian leaf or something. As a rule, though, I don't like kale just to eat. Hmm. I guess I don't mind chopping a tiny little bit and putting it in a salad. I don't mind if it's all crunched up in a smoothie.
Well, if you're gonna put it in a salad, you need to zhuzh it. Do you know what that means? You need to take your oil and whatever else stuff you're going to put on it, and you kind of work it into the kale. Because if you don't, it's like eating straw. But if you zhuzh it, yes, it's a lot better. But have you ever made kale chips? Because kale chips are darn good.
No, I haven't. That sounds complicated.
No, it's not complicated at all. No, it's not. I have a recipe for it on my blog. We'll link to it.
Very good. So the other reason people should grow kale is because kale is one of the Dirty Dozen.
Hey, that's part of our dirt, but we can share it now.
Yes.
So tell people about kale and why it's like number three on the Dirty Dozen. It's disgusting.
Yeah. There's a group. There's actually several Dirty Dozen lists, but we'll link to some of them. But these are vegetables and fruits that have the highest concentration of pesticides on them when you buy them at the store.
Right.
And so kale, I think, was number three. Yep. On the one list.
Strawberries was number one. Spinach was number two. And here's the thing. I have never had to grow kale and use anything on it. Yes, cabbage moth likes it. But the truth is that you can stop that with row covers if you weight them down really well. And I have never had to do anything to spinach. Have you? I mean, spinach is pretty disease, or not disease. It's pretty pest resistant. It's also disease resistant. And then it goes into nectarines, apples, grapes, just gives you a fright.
Well, but back up. I've never had to spray anything on my strawberries.
No, I have never had to either. The biggest problem I have with strawberries is that the turtles like to eat them when they're down in the ground. But if you grow them in raised beds, the turtles can't get to them.
Yeah. And I think there is a, I'm going to call it a gray mold that sometimes will get on my strawberries if we have a real, if it gets really hot and wet.
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that growers are spraying preventatively for some of those things. So when it comes to the Dirty Dozen, I always try to buy organic whenever I can.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's not hard to find. And if you want to grow kale, grow spinach, grow strawberries, those are easy. It takes a little more work to grow apples. And I'm not saying it just because it's a tree. You've got to have a cross-pollination tree. So it's a little more complicated, or have a branch that's grafted on that causes cross-pollination. But these other, I mean, these first three, there is no reason not to grow them yourself. That's my thoughts.
I would agree with you. And people always ask when I speak about gardening, they say, do you spray anything on your garden? And I always tell them that I can buy pesticide-laden vegetables at the grocery store, and I like the idea that I can just pull them out of my garden and wash them off and eat them and not be concerned that they got sprayed with who knows what.
Yeah, we eat the peas, you know, not the little peas, but the no peas and the sweet potted peas. We eat those while we're standing out in the garden. And my old dog, Maddie, she loved them. And so I would toss them to her, you know, as a treat. And I knew that they were okay for her and they were okay for me because I don't spray anything.
I eat green beans and cherry tomatoes out in the garden.
I do too. I consider cherry tomatoes my morning snack when I'm out there working.
Yes, just wipe them off on your shirt, plop them in your mouth.
So, dear listeners, try some cherry tomatoes this year. Grow a little kale or buy it organically. I mean, it's just, it's not that hard.
It isn't.
So, what other vegetables do we want to talk about? Well, first of all, we want to talk about that you want to grow. We've already discussed about topsoil and raised bed garden soil, and we've talked about raised beds. We also want to say start small with things you love to eat. Do not grow radishes if you hate radishes. Just don't.
But if you hate them, grow a little bit of them and try them again, because some things just taste better when you grow them yourself.
Like the turnips we discussed last week.
Right.
Turnips
and
are
cucumbers.
Way, way better. And cucumbers. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
See, I'm getting hungry and it's 45 degrees out and there's nothing to pick in the garden. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry, too. I'm going to have to eat an apple in a little bit. Preferably an organic one. Okay, and so let's talk a little bit about which things you grow from seed versus the things you grow, you buy as plants. So you want to start with the plants?
Yeah, if I was just starting out, I would buy plants for tomatoes. I'd buy plants for peppers. I'd buy basil as a plant. Mm-hmm. I would buy eggplant.
Yeah. I might buy dill if I want to get it started early. Again, here's the thing about dill. And what I usually do is I buy a plant or two of dill, and then I also plant seed. And I do the same thing with basil. And then I put the seed out directly around the other plants. Because with dill, caterpillars, black swallowtail caterpillars, and giant swallowtail caterpillars love, love, love dill. So one of the complaints I always get from readers and listeners is that all of their dill plants were eaten up. Well, if you have a continuous selection of dill, they might not be. But here's the thing, you're helping butterflies. And so I like dill, but I don't love dill. But I just pretty much plant for the butterflies.
I plant it for the butterflies, and I think it's a nice companion plant for cucumbers. It gives the illusion that I'm going to make pickles, but I'm not.
I'm not going to make pickles. I did it. I did all that in my 20s. I made pickles and because I love bread and butter pickles, and that's the only pickle you get me to do now, which doesn't even take dill. But I like that illusion too. And you know what? It's a pretty plant. Dill's a very pretty plant.
And here's the other thing about dill. I don't buy plants or seeds, and I have it every year. It just comes up. Wherever it was the previous year, it comes up. I transplant a few of those around to the new place where the cucumber is going to be growing, and then I just cut the rest off, and you can toss them on a little salad or something, or throw them on a in some egg salad or something like that.
Ooh,
and
yum.
Move on.
Yeah, I like them in potato salad, too. I like dill in potato salad. Well, here's the thing. Here, there are so many butterflies and so many caterpillars that I never have. My dill never goes to seed, so that's why I don't get extras. But occasionally I do. With basil, let's talk about some of our favorite basils. Genovese is one of my favorites.
There's a new basil from Proven Winners called Amazel Basil.
Amazel Basil. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't get the mildew that some basils get when they get really hot. This is mildew resistant. And I don't know if it's which exactly mildew it is. I'll call it mildew. It's resistant to it.
Mm-hmm.
Highly resistant.
It's resistant to a bunch of things. And so it's an amazing, it really is a mazel.
And it's sterile, so it doesn't go to flower. So you're going to get more leaves, more basil. So amazel, right. Basil.
Okay, so that's a new one. And you will, I didn't see any plants last year because I think it's new this year.
It's
I
new
think
this
we
year.
Got to trial it last year. So it's coming out this year. So look for it at your, probably at the box store is where it'll end up first because that often happens. They've also gone into some other plants too. They have a new strawberry and some other things, and they're going to go even more into vegetables and stuff this year. That's exciting.
I also usually buy a purple basil just for the looks of it.
I had three purple basils that I loved, and I've also grown holy basil from seed. That's one of the prettiest plants, just as a pretty plant. And I grew it all along the front of my cut flower beds last year, and it was just beautiful. And guess who likes it? Butterflies and bees.
Nice.
Nice. So for that reason, I grow it, and it's just beautiful in pictures. I'll put up a picture on our Instagram in the next day or so. And then, what's another one I grow? I grow a lot of different basils. I do.
I grow basil. I usually just go around to the little greenhouse, and she usually has a couple of different varieties. I know there's some that have really tiny leaves that you can almost turn into a little topiary.
Yeah, the little miniature ones. In fact, they do turn them into topiaries.
And I like those. Then you can step on them.
Those are cute. Yeah, they're really cute. So those are fun. And also, we talked about peppers, that peppers are good from, you know, unless you're going to start seeds inside. And if you're brand new at gardening, just buy the peppers. It's okay. There's a lot of different types. Try to keep your hot peppers away from your mild peppers. I try to.
And actually, you can try to, but it really doesn't make a difference. Unless you're going to try to save the seed. But otherwise, just put them all together.
Yeah, you aren't going to get, it isn't going to make this year's peppers hot. I should have made that clear. It'll make next year's peppers hot if you grow from your own seed, which I sometimes do.
Yeah, the only vegetable I can think of that is impacted in the same year by how it's pollinated is sweet corn. You want your sweet corn pollinated by sweet corn, not by field corn, because you're actually eating the seeds.
Right.
And so you want that extra sweetness.
Right, because it makes it all taste like field corn.
And by the way, it drives me nuts to see corn plants for sale at the garden center.
Yeah, dumbest thing ever.
Corn should be planted from seed.
Well, I feel the same way about melons. You know, like
yes.
All the melons. Don't buy melon plants. They sprout so fast, and I feel that way about squash too. Unless it's some squash you forgot to buy in seed, and you just got to have it, and they happen to have it at the nursery, well, then that's okay. But dang, don't spend your hard-earned money on those plants.
And the last thing to buy seeds for, even if there are plants, is green beans.
Green beans, yeah.
Do not buy green bean plants. Green beans are so easy to grow from seed. That's why when you're in first grade, the seed they had you grow in the little pot was a green bean seed. It's easy.
Yeah. Either a green bean or a sunflower. They have you grow those too.
That's right.
Because they sprout so fast and so easy. So I hope that helped. I hope that helps people. Don't buy corn in the store. Just buy corn in a package.
And if anybody's getting ready to start their first vegetable garden and they have more questions, we'll leave contact information in the notes. We'd be happy to address them in a future podcast.
We would. And we can even write you back sometimes if we aren't super swamped. So anything? Oh, we better tell them one more thing about tomatoes. When you buy tomato plants, what are you going to look for? You're going to look for whether they're determinate or indeterminate. I cannot tell you how many years.
Okay. There's a lot of things I look for.
Oh, well, yeah. But I mean, a lot of things I look for too. But you need to know if they're indeterminate versus determinate. Because
that's right.
That's how you grow them, right?
Yes. So determinate varieties will not get near as tall. They don't have that terminal bud that keeps growing up, 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 up to where you have a 6-foot plant that has to be staked. And determinate varieties, often the fruit will all ripen at the same time. So if you're into canning and you want a bunch of fruit all at once, a determinate variety will give you all that fruit at once. Most of the tomatoes that are grown for home use are indeterminate. And so you want to stake them or cage them because they will continue to grow up and tall.
Yeah. And even with determinate varieties, some determinate varieties, you still want to cage them because they're just the fruit yield is so heavy duty during like that 3-week period that they put all the fruit on that it'll tear off the limbs if they don't have some sort of support. So before you buy it, make sure it's either determinate or indeterminate. And then you start looking for things like, you know, taste, whether it's an heirloom type, potato leafed type versus the other type. What else do you look for?
Whether it's a canning type of tomato, a slicing tomato, a cherry tomato. And then the other thing is, if you're going to grow your tomato in a big container, look for ones that are labeled patio tomato or good for patio, good for containers. A lot of the companies like Burpee are putting out varieties that they say are great for containers. Buy those. Don't buy an old big boy and put it in a container. Big boy won't be happy all summer. Big boy needs to be in a garden. Big boy wants to be staked up tall.
Yeah, he does. And also, don't plant too many cherry tomatoes. So because I know so many people who have their very first garden and they think, I love cherry tomatoes, so I'm going to plant 3 cherry tomato plants. Most people do not need 3 cherry tomato plants because cherry tomatoes produce like gangbusters. So you want 1, probably, maybe 2 if you're big time cherry tomato people, but you probably want some that you can make sauce out of, like San Marzano. So those are plum type or sauce type tomatoes, which means they have smaller seed cavities, more flesh. You want some that are slicers, mid-season slicers. You might want an early tomato, like early girl or celebrity, that'll put on fruit earlier than others. You might not, because some people don't like those varieties. And then you probably want a cherry tomato. Have I left anything off?
You haven't, but next week, let me tell you how many cherry tomatoes I planted last year.
No, just tell me now. How many did you plant?
I planted about 16.
16? Were you testing them?
I was trying out a lot of different varieties, and I grow them. I don't grow them in my vegetable garden. I was growing them in an area that I knew didn't get optimal sun, so I kind of hedged my bets that they wouldn't get as big. But I did have a lot of cherry tomatoes.
You had too many cherry tomatoes.
In fact, you don't have to pick every single cherry tomato that ripens. Let me just tell you that. The sky doesn't fall. The earth doesn't crack open. Nothing bad happens if you just leave them. The chipmunks enjoy them.
Okay. Well, if you have chipmunks, yes, they enjoy them. That's funny. And you also get more cherry tomatoes next year because those little tomatoes fall to the ground and create more baby tomatoes the following year. But that's okay.
I did try to clean them up. Well, we have one more piece of dirt, and then we got to wrap it up for this week. The garden's calling.
Yeah, because we talk too much. Okay, so we're just going to quickly say, watch Gardener's World with Monty Dawn and other presenters. It's very fun to watch, very enjoyable. You can often find them on YouTube until they're taken down, which usually takes the BBC about 2 days. As soon as they go up,
we should mention Gardener's World is on the BBC and takes place in England with the host Monty Dawn.
Yes, and all of his other co-hosters. Yes. And so is there such a thing as a co-hoster? I don't know. That sounds like coaster. But anyway, the thing is you can use their gardening advice. It's fantastic, except for that all the seasons are completely different because they're in England and you're in the United States where your summers are hot and have lots of sun. Just bear this in mind when you watch it. When you go to England, you will see people growing tomatoes over there, but they grow them in greenhouses under glass. So that should give you an idea.
So in other words, we can use all of their advice, except we can't use all of their advice. But it is right. Fun to watch.
Extremely fun to watch. You can see last season's episodes on BritBox and follow Monty Dawn throughout the whole gardening season. And you can see this year's episodes on YouTube until the BBC snatches them down. Unfortunately, for some reason, the BBC will not show American Gardeners this program in season. I don't know why, because we have several different streaming services that are for British shows. Just, you don't get to watch this one in current time.
Which is all right. It's still fun to watch. And you can find Monty Dawn on Twitter and Instagram and follow him that way. And you can follow us, The Garden Angelist. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook as The Garden Angelist. And email us your questions at thegardenangelist@gmail.com. We'd be happy, as long as we don't get swamped, we'd be happy to take a few questions and answer them in a future podcast.
Thank you guys so much, and thanks for listening. And we hope we see you next time as we chat over the garden gate. Bye now.
Bye, Dee.